Good morning. Hopefully my daughter Iris will stay asleep in the presentation. Let's cross our fingers. Okay. Whoops. She just come up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my presentation is Men Unite Against Family Violence, Preventing Sexual Intimate Partner Violence, but in the Latino migrant community. And I have nothing to disclose for this. Our project is funded by the CDC, and Migrant Coalitions Network is a not-for-profit organization. Learning objective. And a little bit about Migrant Coalitions Network. We've been working since 1989. On family and sexual violence prevention projects. And I'd like to start by defining the term migrant for those of you who may be unfamiliar with this population. A migrant is a person who is required to be absent from a permanent place of residence for the purpose of seeking employment. There are no reliable estimates of the actual number of migrants in the overall U.S. workforce. The best data we have is from the migrant farm worker population. And the U.S. Public Health Service currently estimates that there's a total of 3.5 million farm workers, that's both migrant and seasonal workers, in the United States. Migrants are usually forced to migrate because of economic necessity. They tend to be recent immigrants with very few resources, who have low education, literacy levels, and English language skills, which limits their job opportunities. According to the 2000 National Agricultural Workers Survey, 48% of migrant and seasonal farm workers are U.S. citizens or permanent residents of the United States. But there are many that are undocumented as well. The majority of migrants are from Mexico, as you can see from this pie chart. But you can see that there are a small number of other countries and other parts of Latin America that are represented as well. A significant number are also born in the U.S. and either white or Latino. Here's a breakdown of what the migrant and seasonal farm worker population looks like across the U.S. As you can see, some of the highest numbers are in California, Oregon, Texas, and Florida, as well as other eastern states. And over the past 20 years, as the U.S. economy has been changing, migrant labor has been changing as well. Migrants are doing less farm work as American agriculture becomes more mechanized and the family farm disappears. It is more difficult to obtain permission to work legally in the U.S., so more people are undocumented as well. This makes it more difficult to cross the border, so migrants are less likely to visit their home countries, or less likely to return. People don't have as much contact with their family and social networks as before. Here you see the traditional idea of migrant labor here in the U.S., very rural. And this one shows the new diversity that we're seeing in the migrant labor force. And now I'd like to talk specifically about sexual intimate partner violence in the migrant population. And here's what we know in general about sexual intimate partner violence in the overall U.S. population. We know that around a third of women have been physically or sexually abused by a partner. Although there are intimate partner violence male victims, the majority of victims are in fact women. Considering how difficult it is to obtain general demographic data on migrants, it's not surprising that there's been very few research studies on sexual intimate partner violence for the migrant population. So faced with this lack of data on family violence, MCN conducted two studies. And please note that both of these utilized a convenience sample, so the results really can't be generalized to the entire migrant population. However, our findings did show us that women were much more likely to speak honestly and openly to their peers than to clinic service provider. So our first study, we did screening in the migrant clinics. And the second one, we sent out basically promotoras, peer educators into the community to ask the questions. You can see that more than double the amount of women report experiencing abuse when they were questioned by their peers rather than during a clinic visit. Another interesting relevant study by the Southern Poverty Law Center reported that a majority of farm worker women are sexually harassed in the workplace. See, 90%. And sexual violence information on this population is very difficult to obtain. MCN is hearing, though, from clinicians that more migrant women are reporting being sexually assaulted and abused in transit as immigration laws become stricter and illegal border crossings more dangerous. Undocumented women are extremely vulnerable as they rely on human traffickers in order to enter and travel throughout the U.S. More research really needs to be done on this subject. Now I'd like to talk about the specific barriers for migrants suffering from sexual and intimate partner violence. If any of you work with rural populations, you understand how isolated people can be from health and human services. Victims may not have any way of accessing services that can help them, including a simple 911 call. In some of the camps I've been to, there was no cell phone signal there, and sometimes not even an address to identify the site where they live if they try to call the police. Even if a victim is able to reach out for help, many family and sexual violence service providers do not have bilingual staff to help them. And sadly, if a victim does not speak English, she has an automatic disadvantage in our medical and legal system. There are cases where relatives of the abuser, even the abusers themselves, are sometimes asked to translate for victims. Even if the victim does speak English, she is likely to be confronted by racism and assumptions about her culture. A migrant victim will usually find that the members of the local power structure do not understand or appreciate her way of life. Migrants are often discriminated against and harassed by resident populations and law enforcement and do not always trust them. It is estimated that 60% of farmworker families have incomes below poverty level, and this has been shown to be a vulnerability factor as well. We already mentioned in the previous slide how a person's immigration status can make them especially vulnerable. The new Violence Against Women Act, the VAWA laws, are helping immigrant victims, but they have strict requirements. And also, there are many other issues around legal status to consider. For example, if a victim reports abuse, the partner won't just be sent to the local jail, but they could be deported as well. They may never see them again. And migrants are usually far away from their extended families and other societal structures, such as maybe their churches or regular health care providers. That would normally be available to them in times of crisis. It would be available to a resident victim. If they're traveling with a group of people or as a family, the group may be economically dependent on the abuser, and job security is very limited and increases the possibility that workers will remain in an abusive situation in order to remain employed. Few migrants are familiar with local resources that are available to help them or their rights according to federal law or of the different states that they travel through. And keep in mind that people are often just in one place for a couple of months, or maybe even weeks. And as we know, the laws regarding family violence and the local law enforcement support is very different from county to county and from state to state throughout the U.S. So based on the results of our research, MCN has created various sexual and intimate partner violence programs addressing the distinct needs of the migrant community. Our two current projects are, next slide, are highlighted in the green. I'd like to talk in further detail about our most recent initiative, Hombres Unidos contra Violencia Familiar, or Men Unite Against Family Violence. We came to realize with our work that the most effective way to prevent violence was to go straight to societal roots, which basically means get men involved. So the result was the Preventing Sexual and Intimate Partner Violence in Racial Ethnic Minority Populations project funded by the CDC, which we've now, it's come to be known as the Men United Against Family Violence. Our participants describe it as classes on machismo, or classes about our culture. So we're currently in steps 4 through 7 in this program, and we're just starting year 4 of the 5-year project. Here's another way to look at our process. During our literature review, we found that there was no research data which documented risk and protective factors of the perpetration of sexual intimate partner violence specifically for Hispanic migrant men. So instead, we looked at the related factors for Mexican natives and isolated and mobile populations. And we have sought to integrate the protective factors into our intervention design. Highlighted in green are some factors which really came out later when we started to conduct our intervention. The men talked a lot about drinking, being involved with violence, and being raised in violent families. They also repeatedly talked about the importance of being a good father and role model in their families as a motivator. The program inventory was conducted by review of existing inventories, internet searches, queries to project partners, queries to listserv, and interviews. Our finding was that there were no programs aimed specifically at preventing SIPV with migrant Hispanic men. So in 2006, we conducted a knowledge, attitude, behaviors, and belief survey in 5 sites in the U.S. And we found the demographic information on our 249 respondents was similar to the nationwide farm worker data that we looked at earlier. The men were relatively young, had low education levels, were recent arrivals. Most were working in agriculture, and most had an intimate partner. And our general parameters for the survey were for Latino men, but the majority were from Mexico. The survey was quite in-depth. It was an in-depth interview and took at least an hour for the interviewers to conduct each one. The various survey questions were grouped so that we could evaluate the responses using scales. And to give you an idea of the types of questions we asked, here's the questions that we used for the relationship behavior belief scale. In general, we found that violent behavior in a relationship was not considered acceptable. And there were some differences among respondents in the different states. Men in Florida scored lower in desired beliefs and behaviors for some reason. And surprisingly, only 2% of respondents refused to answer the questions about their own behaviors. But we did find that there was a significant difference in the way they responded to male and female interviewers. They tended to report more violent behaviors to male interviewers. So we don't know if they're just being more honest, if they're talking to their guys, or but it's something to consider in your research design. And a majority of respondents claimed that they would make a public stand against violence, given the chance. Respondents acknowledged that partner abuse and rape are big problems in their communities. And there was overall real interest in prevention. And you can see also that there appears to be a direct correlation between the extent that SIPV is perceived as a problem and the willingness to prevent it. We decided to design our intervention using the most popular activities mentioned in the survey, which was a series of discussions with other men. But as you can see, movies was also very popular, so if anyone wants to make a movie, go for it. Be well received, apparently. In our open-ended discussions, the main reason that a man would not participate in an intervention would be because of lack of time due to work, but note that a large amount said that nothing would stop them from participating. Strong interest in helping others was the biggest motivator. Our interviewers were all bilingual outreach workers who found that the activity in itself was a prevention activity and actually raised awareness in the community just by doing the survey. And it was an awakening experience. You can see I highlighted things. It was a teachable moment. They were often able to engage in other discussion, further discussion with the men. And they really had an interest to participate, which was surprising to some of the interviewers. Based on a literature review, program inventory, and results of the CAB survey, we designed our intervention. We decided to conduct popular education-style courses with Latino migrant men using bilingual male facilitators. Here are the themes that we include in our curriculum of 5 sessions. The end, we had a celebration with the men, where they're invited to, where they're supposed to invite other men from their community to participate. And we all gave them all certificates as well, which was a very important aspect. Some of the men, it was the first time they've ever received a certificate for anything in their life, or they've ever graduated from anything. And we began our program implementation in May 2007 in three sites in the U.S. And this year we're adding two new sites in Arizona and Texas. Training the course facilitators really is the most important aspect of this intervention. They're the key to our success. And we don't yet have our 2008 results analyzed yet, but we expect them to be just as good, if not better, than 2007, we've heard from the field. Of the 112 men that came to the first session of the course, only three dropped out in all three sites during the five-week period, which is pretty good attendance, considering that it was over 5 weeks and these men are working very hard. A pre- and post-test was taken by each participant. We tried to keep it as simple as possible, considering their literacy levels, for this group with only 12 questions, and the questions were also read to the participants by the facilitators. I'd like you to note the big change in question 10. During my visit to all three sites, men at each place expressed to me that they didn't know that emotional and verbal abuse is violence too, and how much it affects people. And there was also a big change in 11. The men all seem more confident that they know now what to say to someone who is being abusive. During the course, the participants brainstorm and practice how to react in different situations when confronted by violence. They come up with their own answers and solutions. We don't offer them to them during the course. And here's what these results look like as a graph. Overall, we can see we definitely had positive change according to the pre- and post-tests. And I just wanted to show you Florida. You might remember that this state had the worst scores during the CAB survey. And later, they showed the most dramatic positive changes in the course pre- and post-test, maybe because they had so far to go. They really had the biggest change with the course. And then our experiences of our participants. These are some of the highlights of the course participant feedback. There's a lot of emphasis on men's roles and their families, how important being a good role model and training younger men to avoid making the same mistakes. In our courses, we had multi-generational. We had older men and younger men together in the courses, and we found that really made a very positive dynamic. Some more experiences of participants. And it was also, it was interesting, it was mentioned that men don't want their daughters to be in an abusive relationship when they grow up. Younger unmarried men mentioned how they feel like they're better prepared for marriage now and will have an idea of how they're supposed to act when they do find a wife. And they didn't seem to want to talk as much about changing their relationships with their partners, though. Perhaps this is too difficult for them to express. They're not ready to talk about it yet. Or maybe the intervention needs to focus more on this aspect, too. We made some changes this year, so we'll see if that is different now. I also want to point out that we repeatedly heard that they now have the language to talk about these things. Violence in their environment was something they were aware of, but they didn't know how to articulate it or open a conversation on this issue. The facilitators have also found that the course is influencing their own lives in a positive way and their perceptions of their own culture and society. That they are making changes in the way in their relationships with their children and their partners as well. So here are some of my recommendations for prevention work with Latino migrant men. The key to our intervention really has been having good, competent facilitators who are known and trusted in their communities. I hope that this project may inspire all of you to work with this population and use our methodology in the future. We're going to be releasing our curriculum to the public in 2009 when our pilot testing is finished. And please visit the MCN website for further information, or feel free to contact us so that we can put you on our mailing list. I have some business cards up here if you'd like to take one at the end. MCN also has some other resources for family violence prevention with the migrant population. And we also have clinical screening guides on our website available for free download. We have a fotonovela to work with this population and various posters as well. Thank you very much. If there's any questions?
Are there any questions? My name is Manuel Contreras, and I conduct a study, very similar study in Mexico, about
oh, great.
Intimate partner violence and men.
Mm-hmm.
I found very similar things that you are presenting now. But what I found interesting in my study and here also is that even that men consider that violence, the norm, is an violence in general is condemned among Latino communities, among Mexican men. If you have men in Mexico also, it's very similar. They say that violence is not a good thing, but they still do it.
Right.
They continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I found is about two main things. One is about the gender norms. In some occasions, it's particularly like fine to still be aggressor of violence. For example, they say, "Oh, do you consider that it's okay that to slap to your partner?" No, it's not. But what if your partner is was unfaithful?
Mm-hmm.
Oh well, maybe yes. Or if she didn't take care of the children in a good way. No,
mm-hmm.
That's okay. That's like a correct way. So that's one thing. And the other is why they define it as violence. For example, what happened is that for them, because they live a lot of violence during the childhood, but also it was a finding that,
mm-hmm.
like, very similar to the case of Ecuador. Even that they found that even that they they consider, for example, a slap. They give, like, for example, the slaps or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very frequent for them. So slap is not violence.
Right.
They don't consider slap
I don't know, yeah, they didn't see the emotional abuse as being something either. Right.
Pushing to the partners is not considered violence. So, you know, it's very like, when you present the results, it's like, you know, what they are really defining as violence, because they say no, violence is not, probably it's like going to be a progress in this. But I'm not sure, because even when we have evaluated interventions, and not only in Mexico, all around the world, interventions focusing on men and violence, they show that in these programs, what they do is to change the type of violence they are doing. I mean, they, after the program, after the intervention, they go back to their homes,